Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Welcome to the Path to Zero. I'm Tucker Perkins, and here we are in the middle of June 2020. With this podcast, I'm taking a journey through the complex, divisive, messy world that's the global energy industry, and I'm searching for conversations that help shed light on how we, our community, our world, can move toward a low-carbon future. You know, I've been in the energy business in some capacity all of my working life, so this is a subject of real interest to me, and I hope that as you listen, you'll find something that interests you just enough to drop me a note to keep the discussions rolling forward. And every episode, I'm inviting an industry expert to talk about their efforts to achieve a low-carbon future or clean energy or whatever else we want to throw in. And as always, let me start by leveling the playing field. You know that I'm a representative of the propane industry, but what may surprise you is that our industry acknowledges and worries about the negative effects of climate change, driven by increasing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. We're in agreement with the vast majority of the scientific community when they report that humans are putting too much carbon up into the air. And I say this up front because I want to start in agreement with you so then we can more objectively explore the areas where agreement may not always be so easy. Well, I'm very happy to be welcoming my guest, Mr. Cliff Gladstein. Cliff is the founding president of GNA, a clean transportation and energy consulting firm with offices in both New York and Santa Monica, California. Hi, Cliff. Thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here, Tucker.
Before we dive too deep in today's conversation, why don't you tell us a little bit about Gladstein Neandros and what your consulting company does?
Gladstein Neandros & Associates, also known as GNA, is an environmental consultancy that focuses on helping operators of mobile equipment reduce their environmental footprint. So that is focused on primarily medium and heavy duty vehicles, but vehicles across the spectrum from forklifts to ocean going vessels. And we assist them with virtually every aspect of transitioning to cleaner technology.
One of the reasons we have you today as a guest is we were listening to you MC a webinar the other day called Renewable Gas 360. Renewable Gas 360 started as an annual symposium. What was the genesis of that program and what is it you're really trying to accomplish through RG360?
The genesis of the program was about 5-6 years ago when the effort in California to electrify all end uses began in earnest. There was a group of us that was concerned that electrification, whereas it does provide a lot of really solid solutions for a lot of end-use applications, it's not necessarily universally ideal, particularly in the transportation sector and particularly in the heavy-duty transportation sector. So we wanted to think through the other renewable alternatives to fuel the transportation sector, and also wanted to think through how renewable fuels could facilitate the renewable electricity revolution that we're all going through, and felt that talking about renewable molecules would add to the discussion and add to the policy options that we think should be a part of the discussion.
We read so much about renewable, but almost primarily it's always viewed as solar and wind. Tell me how renewable gases fit in to that equation.
Renewable gases are incredibly important. I think there are three primary segments of the industry. The first is those gases that are generated by the degradation of organic material. These are the things that we're most familiar with: wastewater, landfills, materials that are anaerobically digested, compost, those sorts of things. Contemporary methane is with us. It is something that is generated every single day in vast quantities by modern life. Harnessing that energy resource is the epitome of sustainability. It's taking waste products or products that were known as wastes and turning them into feedstocks for value-added energy. And in most cases, the carbon footprint of the renewable gas that's generated is less than zero, making it an extraordinarily valuable tool in addressing climate change. Another aspect of the renewable gas sector are those gases that can be are created from a processes called pyrolysis or gasification. Those are organic materials that are too dense or too dry to be anaerobically digested. So think of trimmings, tree trimmings, grass, many grasses, orchard waste, forest waste, dead and dying trees. In the West, tree death and tree mortality is a big issue, and of course is an enormous source of the wildfires that have devastated so many communities in recent years. Using gasification technology to cull the dead and dying trees that are the fuel for wildfires and use them as a source for energy through gasification is another very, very promising strategy. The third technology, which is just as important as the other two, is electrolysis. And that is taking electricity, running it through water, and generating hydrogen and oxygen by breaking down water molecules. This is a technology known as power to gas. And power to gas is, in my view and the view of my company and many of our colleagues, an essential technology for enabling the transition to a renewable energy economy. Because you can store unlimited volumes of energy as molecules. Unlike batteries, which have all kinds of limitations, both in practice and in application, and just in our ability to manufacture them in the quantities and sizes that are necessary to provide the backup necessary and storage necessary to make a renewable electricity system work. So those are the three forms of renewable gases that we discuss in RG360.
Oh, wide ranging. You don't read a lot about a federal or even state strategy for promoting renewable gases. Do you find that the research and technology is being evaluated at the highest levels by both state and federal agencies?
The direct answer is no. There is some effort going on at the state and federal level to develop renewable gases, but not nearly the same amount of resource or energy is being applied to this renewable sector as being applied to renewable electricity. And I think that that's a mistake.
I listened to your most recent webinar, and you had two fascinating guests. You had a state senator from California, Nancy Skinner, and you also had a scientist, I think, George Paredes from Lawrence Livermore National Lab. So let's start with Senator Skinner. She seems to be a big proponent of electrolytic hydrogen that you've talked about, which is just making hydrogen from electricity. Her thinking seemed to be really around zero greenhouse gases, but the source of the energy still seems to me to be a challenge. What did she talk about when she talked about your webinar and her interest in electrolytic hydrogen?
Well, Nancy is very interested in developing what's called green hydrogen. There's essentially three kinds of hydrogen. There's brown hydrogen, which is hydrogen that is created from the reformation primarily of fossil natural gas. There's blue hydrogen. Blue hydrogen is very similar in that it's a hydrogen that's generated from steam reformation of fossil gas, but then the carbon dioxide that is produced by that process is captured and injected into the crust of the earth for as in the process known as carbon capture and sequestration. And then finally, there's green hydrogen, which I just described, which is taking renewable electricity, and that electricity is run through water and hydrogen is captured. Nancy is very interested in developing green hydrogen and creating a plan in California to promote and produce green hydrogen. And she's introduced legislation that addresses that issue and was talking about that during our RG360 webinar.
One of the things that I often study about is not only the use of electricity to create this, but sometimes the offsetting other scarce resources that are used. For batteries, it's often precious metals. But for electrolytic hydrogen, no one ever talks about water and water usage. In a state that is as concerned over water resources as California, why do they overlook the tremendous demand on water for electrolytic hydrogen?
Well, Tucker, the demand for water, it turns out, is not that significant. Unfortunately, I don't have the precise information in front of me right now, but we were just talking about this the other day internally with my chief engineer, and we were discussing how much water would be required in order to provide the backup power, the storage capability necessary in California. And I believe that in the end, the final statistic was it was less than 1% of the entire annual consumption of water in the state of California that would be necessary in order to store sufficient renewable electricity as green hydrogen. I'm sorry that I don't have the data in front of me, but It was not that significant, surprisingly. Now, 1% of the water that's consumed in California, that's a lot of water, but when you're thinking about it on a grand macro scale, and you're thinking about the benefits that would be created by such a system, then it doesn't seem that daunting.
Yes, I agree. So the featured speaker in the symposium I was listening to was George Paredes. And he's talking about a report that he helped author called Getting to Neutral, Options for Negative Carbon Emissions in California. Fascinating report where they talked about removing 125 million metric tons of CO2 a year. The cost, though, would be about $10 billion. What is your reaction when you hear those costs and benefits?
My reaction is that those are relatively inexpensive costs relative to the benefit. When one is thinking about cost effectiveness, is one wants to compare the costs of achieving an emission reduction through the utilization of one strategy to the costs of achieving an emission reduction through the utilization of another strategy. And the information that was being presented by George and was presented in the report that Lawrence Livermore National Labs produced was that the costs of the strategy that they were proposing were all well within what society is already paying for carbon equivalency reductions. I think that the highest cost that was in his report was for the air separators. One of the things in his report that they were talking about was utilizing a well-known technology, been around for decades, to literally pull carbon dioxide out of the air and then inject that carbon dioxide back into the crust of the earth where it came from through carbon capture and sequestration. And their estimate for the cost of that strategy was roughly about $195 per metric ton of CO2e stored. The California Low Carbon Fuel Standard Program, the cost of a metric ton of carbon dioxide avoided in that program is over $200 a ton right now. So that was the highest cost that was proposed by Lawrence Livermore. And from there, the other strategies that they proposed were much less expensive. So all in all, the strategy that was being proposed was very cost effective relative to the costs that California is already paying.
Well, let's take a break, Cliff. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you your thoughts on some of the big challenges that getting to neutral faces. And then I've got a few questions about some of the other work that your team at GNA is doing. So let's take a break.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a future of zero emissions starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane, Clean American Energy. Learn more at cleanamericanenergy.us.
Cliff Gladstein, founder and chief thinker at GNA Clean Transportation and Energy Consultants, is my guest on Path to Zero today. And we've been talking about a presentation he featured on Renewable Gas 360, a webinar series he's hosting. The presentation that we've been talking about was called Getting to Neutral, presented by George Paredes from Lawrence Livermore Labs. Cliff, did anything surprise you about the findings in the paper, Getting to Neutral?
I don't know if I would use the word surprised. The conclusion of the report that I found most compelling was the notion that by using a multi-pronged strategy, not utilizing or not seeking a silver bullet and incorporating a variety of different off-the-shelf strategies, that California could achieve carbon neutrality quicker and less expensive than the path that the state appears to be on right now. So that was it wasn't a surprising conclusion, because the world that I'm in, I'm often confronted with decisions that policymakers are making that are the least cost-effective approach because it's driven by a political agenda as opposed to science. So that that the Lawrence Livermore National Lab, an association of some of the world's best scientists, came up with a similar conclusion, it did not surprise me. The only other thing I would say that I would want to emphasize is that the report focused on the utilization of technologies that all already exist. Lawrence Livermore was not proposing that we needed to develop something in order for this future to arrive. It essentially said, look, we have all these tools in our toolbox already. If we utilize them and deploy them correctly, we can achieve carbon neutrality in this state 5 years sooner and for many billion dollars less cost. And that, I think, was one of the most important elements and findings of the Lawrence Livermore Getting to Neutral study.
You know, I see that so often myself is that, and again, I approach this as a scientist rather than certainly with any political agenda, but it seems like everyone wants to step over today's technologies. And as you say, the tools in today's toolbox, which could begin to make positive impacts now, and for some silver bullet solution that doesn't even manifest itself until 20 years out, if it becomes reality, often at a significant cost. It's such a strange study in human behavior. So it's nice to see people like George and Lawrence Livermore really helping to show that there's a way to reduce emissions today and change lives today and change climate today. So that's interesting. You know, so I ask you about, did anything surprise you? As an MC, you're also looking at the questions coming in and you kind of get a feel for what the audience is thinking. Was there anything from the audience that had you scratching your head?
We had quite the audience for this particular initial RG360 webinar. There was over 525 people that were in attendance. Some of the questions that we got were from individuals who unidentified, but who clearly did not like the conclusions that were being offered by Lawrence Livermore in their Getting to Neutral study. As you probably experienced this as well, one of the things that we are constantly being bombarded with, and I think you alluded to it in the statement that you just made, is the perfect being the enemy of the good. And this is a common theme, not just in environmental policy or energy policy, but in so many different aspects of our life. And politics are very polarized right now. They've been polarized for a while. And there is this tendency to demonize what you either don't understand or that doesn't fit into your worldview. And some of the questions that we got from our audience for the first webinar clearly embodied those perspectives. They did not trust or want to believe the information that was being conveyed to them by these preeminent scientists. And hearkening back to your earlier question, perhaps that was one of the things that was most surprising to me. The ability of folks nowadays to disregard science. Unfortunately, we see that play out every single day now with the pandemic. So it shouldn't surprise us, but it's clearly an element that we deal with on a daily basis. Those of us that are trying to find workable, cost-effective solutions for air pollution, climate protection, and economic development.
Let me ask, I know we really look to you and your firm as being experts in renewable gases, and I know y'all have helped us as we talk about renewable propane. We never really hear people like Senator Skinner or anybody talk about propane's role in creating hydrogen or the role of renewable propane. Do y'all ever talk about that, or is it just understood that generally where renewable natural gas can do it, renewable propane could also?
No, there's definitely a role for renewable propane. I'll give you maybe a pair of anecdotes. One is I have a colleague who works at the South Coast Air Quality Management District. For your listeners who may not know what the South Coast Air Quality Management District is, it's the largest regional air quality agency in the country, perhaps even the world. It covers the four counties that make up the greater Los Angeles metropolitan area with a population of about 15 million people. This individual it was a very, very strong proponent of the electrification of everything. Then she experienced one of the wildfires that I was referring to earlier, and her house was destroyed. And she realized that one of the things that went first were her solar cells. And she was unable to get power back to the property. If I recall correctly, maybe the whole thing wasn't destroyed. Maybe it was partially burned down, but her grid was eliminated. So one of the things that she realized was she needed to have energy on site, and that the one thing that wasn't destroyed during the fire was her propane tank. But she did not want to have fossil source propane. She wanted to have renewable propane. So she quickly became a renewable propane advocate, because she realized that in order to address issues of cleaning up our energy supply, we needed diversity in choice. We should not eliminate diversity. We can still go renewable while still having, say, combustion. The other anecdote that I would share with you is when we did our last RG360 seminar, which was last January in Sacramento, we had a panel, as you're well aware, on renewable propane. One of the big pushes nowadays is to produce renewable diesel and to produce renewable aviation fuel. One of the byproducts of producing renewable diesel and producing renewable aviation fuel is renewable propane. And there is a growing market, particularly in remote areas, those areas that are served by folks like AmeriGas and Suburban and so many others, for renewable propane for these remote applications. And it has to be part, it has to be one of the tools that we utilize in order to enable as many people as possible to reduce their consumption of fossil sources of energy and increase their consumption of renewable sources of energy.
Yeah, we're very excited as we look to the future what not only renewable propane can do, but blends. Renewable propane with renewable DME is a great example where carbon intensity becomes quite negative. And so, great, great promise for climate change. Well, let's think about wrapping up. You are exposed to so many neat things in your role at Gladstein Neandros. Any other cool projects that you want to talk about that your team's working on? I know y'all are so involved in transportation. We really haven't touched on that much today. Any other cool projects you want to share?
All the projects that we have at GNA are cool. I spend a lot of my time, I'll tell you about a project that I just wrapped up. We did a study. This is a study of the supply of renewable natural gas that will be produced in the state of California for use in transportation. The impetus of this study was the Air Resources Board, the air quality agency in California, wanting to eliminate incentives from one of their richest incentive programs for natural gas vehicles. Rather than eliminating funding, they said, you can continue to get funding, but only if you are fueled with renewable natural gas that's produced inside the state of California. Well, they made that requirement without understanding how much of a supply of renewable natural gas was actually coming out of the state of California. It's actually pretty small, even though more than 75% of all the natural gas consumed in transportation comes from renewable resources. And almost all of that comes from outside the state of California. So we endeavored to do a study. And in fact, at the next RG360 webinar, I will be doing a presentation on that study. And we found that over the next 3.5 years, there's going to be about 120 million diesel gallon equivalent of renewable natural gas that's going to be coming online in the state of California, mostly coming from dairies. And that gas will have an average carbon intensity value of minus 100. What that means is you could have one diesel truck that's fueled by the average RNG produced in the state of California, and that would completely offset the carbon emissions of two diesel trucks. So it's actually quite impressive and quite important. And we actually just wrapped up that study last week and made a presentation to the sponsors. And we're quite excited about the response to that study.
That's great. You have done so much great work, I know, for us and for all of those like us that really are trying to promote clean climate at a responsible price for both users and the community. So I want to thank you. I also want to thank you for being my guest today on the Path to Zero. It's been fun to have you talk with us about kind of so many things that we're interested in. So one way we love to thank our guests is to plant a virtual tree for them in the Propane National Forest. Since you're in California and we've been talking a lot about California, let's talk about the two places we love, the El Dorado National Forest, not far from Lake Tahoe, or the Sierra National Forest, which is quite near Yosemite. We'd love to plant a tree in that virtual forest for you. Do you have a pick?
Sierra there, Tucker.
Lovely, lovely spot. Cliff, again, I want to thank you for being on the Path to Zero today. But before we go, you want to tell our guests how they can get registered for the Renewable Gas 360 series?
Absolutely. Please visit www.gladstein.org and just navigate your way to the events, and you'll be able to register there. Or if you Google Renewable RG360 webinar, you will also be taken to our website, to our portal, where you will be able to register for the RG360 webinar that we're having on July 30th, and for any subsequent RG360 webinar that we're going to be organizing over the next year. And encourage you to come in and hear us out.
Excellent. Cliff, thank you very much for being with me. And thanks to all of you for taking the trip with me on the Path to Zero.
Thank you, Tucker.
This has been Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. Subscribe and learn more at cleanamericanenergy.us. And if you like what you have heard, rate us on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts.